Thank you, Your Honor. Kathy Gowdy, Alternate Defense Counsel, number 28436.
Ms. Gowdy, before you begin watching, can I ask you to move that mic closer to you?
Yeah, it always feels like there's a bug in front of my nose when we do this. Sorry. I think it's because I'm so close to it.
Fair enough.
The essence of this appeal comes down to is the court denied a 35A finding that the sentence was illegal. The sentence ordered was illegal. The court only has the ability for pre-sentence confinement credit to note the number of days that should be credited to a defendant, which is 70 days, and be sure that the minimus is correct.
Counsel, did you cite a case in your brief indicating that the failure to grant the pre-sentence confinement credit with respect to a sentence rendered that sentence illegal?
I think I just assumed it as a matter of law because the statute did not permit that discretion to the court. And the case then that states that they would
is there a clear statute in the statutory language that would clearly direct the court to apply that pre-sentence confinement credit in this case?
If there was a clear statute, I don't think we would have all these pages of briefing, Your Honor.
I guess that's a no.
I believe it's an ambiguous no.
Okay.
All right. The statute is illegal because he did not present a correct minimus in this case. It has been affirmed by the Colorado Supreme Court in 2008, I believe that is the Johnson case, that the duty of the trial court is to note the amount of pre-sentence credit and to note it on the minimus. They do not have, there is nowhere in the statute that grants discretion for how much or how little or any or all that can be granted.
So the ultimate question comes down to is whether the statute here requires an order of pre-sentence confinement credit, I think. And as I understand your argument, I think we all agree, we have a statute that says in a DOC sentence, you got to do it. And we have a statute that says in a misdemeanor kind of sentence, a jail sentence, you got to do it. And we're in a different kind of boat here. We're kind of on a probation sentence. So my first question, do you agree that there's no statute that's directly on point? I think that's what you're just telling Judge Daly. Is that correct?
I would say that when you read through the cases, that's not correct because the cases, even Castro, assumed that the court had the discretion to grant pre-sentence credit.
And that's exactly where I was going. I mean, Castro suggests that when the statute doesn't mandate it, the court has discretion.
Right.
And so then here, I'm sorry, I interrupted you twice.
I'm interrupting you.
So here, I mean, the court, I think, exercised discretion and looked at it and said, you know, this gentleman spent a number of times in pre-sentence, this many days in pre-sentence confinement credit, and I'm going to consider that in sentencing and probation. Why is it, if we're in the realm of discretion as opposed to a mandatory award of pre-sentence confinement credit, where is there an abuse of discretion here?
Because there is no discretion to grant pre-sentence credit of any kind at all on a probationary sentence if we take that stance. Because there is no statute that grants it for probation. It is done. It has been done since the 70s, since the cases started discussing pre-sentence credit. But there would be nothing that clearly does it. The courts have uniformly used it and applied it in felony sentencings in this state.
They've applied it to probation, to jail terms that are part of a probationary sentence?
Absolutely.
And what authority is there that you can cite to us on that? Because I did not see any in the opening brief.
The only authority is the 18.1.3405 and discussions going back in the case law of granting pre-sentence credit. And it goes into the...
That doesn't necessarily answer the question that, as you say, cases have been doing it since the 70s, and I'm saying what case has done it in the context of a probationary sentence?
None that I could find, Your Honor, probably because if they got probation, they didn't appeal. That's one of the problems with appellate case law is you'll get a more worst-case scenario. But I could find none on probationary. I do know as a practicing attorney and also this court, it is commonly done. And it is referenced to. And it is commonly done because if you come in with someone that has already served 70 days of pre-sentence, then they're being treated differently on a liberty interest on the Constitution than people that were able to make bond. And it's a matter of basic constitutional equity.
You're arguing that trial court is required to give pre-sentence confinement credit on a probationary sentence?
Yes.
even though there's no authority in the statutes to say that.
Yes, and CASTO itself got overruled by the legislature when they went in and made it mandatory misdemeanors.
Now, is this requirement that the court grant pre-sentence confinement a constitutional one?
It is only becomes constitutional if it is not granted, because then it is a violation of the equal protection of liberty.
Well, granting it is of a constitutional imperative.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
If not granting it would violate the Constitution, then granting it is a constitutional imperative. You have to grant it.
Yes, Your Honor. Sorry, I didn't understand your question. But yes, I believe you do. Because otherwise you're treating people differently, and while it's not a protected class, it is a liberty.
Now, if the defendant's probation is revoked, and he's sentenced to a sentence of confinement, the DOC, he would, under the statute, be entitled to pre-sentence confinement on that sentence, would he not?
Yes, and this defendant
is... So how is his equal protection argument, how is his right to equal protection breached?
Because he's being treated differently than other people that were given probation for the same crime, for the same set of facts, simply because he could not post bond because he was indigent.
But if people that got sentenced to confinement without having served any pre-sentence confinement, and he gets sentenced to confinement and gets his pre-sentence confinement, then how is his right to equal protection violated?
I don't think I can mix those two, because probation is a rehabilitative sentence. Prison is not. But in this particular case, my client stands under a 4-year DOC sentence that was suspended. And I don't have a minimus that clearly states he's entitled to his 70 days. But as far as the equal protection goes violation, people need to be treated the same whether they're rich or poor, and it's a liberty interest. It doesn't fall in protected classes. It's a liberty interest, pure and simple. And to construe the statute in the way that occurred here, that gave the judge that I have the discretion to do this, when he has no such statute, unless you use the one that's in the imprisonment one, he either has the discretion, he either doesn't have the discretion, and he must get pre-sentence credit, or it is simply not available under our statutory scheme, even though it has been applied in sentencing, innumerable sentencing in this state.
Ms. Gann, I'm afraid maybe I'm not tracking your argument.
Okay.
I apologize. So as I read Castro, the Supreme Court in that case, and I recognize the legislature's fixed the problem Castro has addressed, but in that case, the Supreme Court said the statute didn't expressly cover the situation, in that particular fact. And the court says, therefore, we're not going to say PSCC is mandatory. The court then held, therefore, it's discretionary. So it seemed, you've said a couple times that let's take the constitutional issue out for a minute, that it's mandatory. I'm having trouble seeing where the mandatory comes from. Now, in your brief, you suggested that this is what the legislature must have intended, since they provided it mandatory in the DOC context, in the jail context, therefore it must be. That's one argument. But as I read Castro and his progeny, it seems to suggest where pre-sentence confinement credit is not mandatory, the court has discretion. Do you disagree with that? You seem to be, and maybe I'm just misunderstanding.
No, it's the conundrum of this case, because there is no statute people giving it discretionarily unless we use the 405 statute.
But that was issued in Castro, too. There was no statute that said discretion. The holding was, it's not mandatory, therefore it's discretionary.
But it was also whether it applied to a misdemeanor sentence when you were sitting in jail on a felony. The facts were a bit different.
Right, because there was no statute. That was the problem. There was no statute mandating
the misdemeanor.
Okay.
That's
and
correct.
The court then said, so it's discretion. Why isn't that analogous to what we have here? There's no statute directly on point, so why wouldn't Castro and its progeny suggest that the court had discretion?
Because it then makes the statute unconstitutional because of the liberty interest.
Okay, let me ask you
that. It can be construed just fine, just as it's been by judges all the years. But when you dig into this, there simply is no discretion for the court to grant it to anyone that served pretrial sentence confinement if we take CASTO and apply it strictly and we take the people's argument. And then we get into the C's. I don't think we need to get to a constitutionality.
But let me ask you about the equal protection argument then, and you've said a couple of times you can't treat people differently. I think you can treat people differently, and then you have to decide, is there a liberty interest, is it fundamental right, and what's the standard? And I think this would probably be a rational basis review if we got there. But would you agree with that?
The rational basis, I believe it would be. I've been trying to dig through it. It is a pure liberty interest, so it doesn't fall in the protected classes, which is what the dissent, and I believe it was not Taubman, but the other case in which there was a great deal of dissent and discussion of equal protection that I cited. But they were all in the protected class. We don't have a protected class. Being poor is not protected.
I appreciate
that. But we have a pure liberty interest of imprisonment. And I keep thinking, running through my head is that line from Manuel La Mancha, where, you know, if you call it pre-sentence credit or not, he was in jail. He was incarcerated. So if the pitcher hits the rock or the rock hits the pitcher, it's going to be bad for the pitcher. And for my client, it was 70 days in jail he served that he should not have. And
I'm smiling because my daughter just did a production of Manuel La Mancha, so I've seen it recently. If we're on a rational basis review, what would be irrational for the legislature to have decided to give the trial court maximum discretion in the context of probation? And which is what the court struggled here. I think the court really tried and said, I think I can consider the fact that this man did, you know, these many days in pre-sentence, and I'm going to consider that, and therefore I'm going to sentence him to probation instead of a DOC sentence. What's irrational about that?
There's nothing irrational about it, except he did not have the authority to do that under the Johnson case from the Colorado Supreme Court in 2008. He did not. All he's empowered to do once he relies on that statute is give a correct minimus with the correct number of pre-sentence confinement days on it. And that is the mess that we have before us here. I would reserve, I guess, the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Matthew Holman, registration number 17846, appearing for the people in this matter.
Mr. Holman, do you concede that the issue presented in this case is one involving an illegal sentence?
I do not, Your Honor. The statutes here do not require agreement of pre-sentence confinement, correct?
Let's assume they did. Would it be an illegal sentence for the judge to have overlooked that or not to have put it on the minimus?
I don't think so, Your Honor, although I'm not sure if you're one step farther ahead than I am. I'm probably sure you're one step ahead of me on that. But I'm starting, and by the way, I'm going to be unable to quote a man I don't lose the episode. I may be able to cover that for you, but I'm not sure that no. I would say that does not constitute an illegal sentence fundamentally, and I don't think this is something I covered in the briefs. And I'm sure, but an illegal sentence is one that is not authorized by the law, and the sentence that was given here was authorized by law, which was a sentence of 4 years of unsupervised probation plus a 90-day jail term. Whether or not a defendant has been granted pre-sentence confinement credit would not render that an illegal sentence.
That wasn't the complete sentence. The complete sentence was 3 years in incarceration suspended.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Is that an illegal sentence?
No, that's not. And the reason I think, and what your question earlier, Judge Roy, I think brings that point up, which is if this defendant were revoked and sent to the DOC for the 3 years, the statutes, the DOC statute 18.1.3405 would provide for credit for those 70 days. So
I think Judge Roy was asking a different question.
Oh, all right.
I think Judge Roy was saying in the event he were revoked and then he would put under a suspended sentence, can you suspend a sentence under the present statutes?
Yes, I believe you can, Your Honor. I'm not aware, I have not looked through this, but I believe the statutes allow you to suspend the sentence.
Are you familiar with any of the cases, the pre-sentence confinement credit cases from the 80s? Termin, and there's an accompanying case, I forget what the name of the case was, But I wondered, in that case, was it postured as an illegal sentence case?
Honestly, Your Honor, I don't recall. I apologize.
Oh.
I apologize. I wanted to quickly turn on the question of an illegal sentence. To the extent that the defendant is arguing that there's an abuse of discretion here, that also would not be an illegal sentence claim. Because if the judge is exercising their discretion, again, unless the sentence given is illegal, there wouldn't be an issue about an abuse of discretion. I want to speak briefly about mootness, because the claims that the defendant has raised here would have no practical effect. The defendant's claim is that he should have gotten credit against the 90-day jail term for the 70 days he spent incarcerated. This court determining whether or not he's entitled to that would not affect him in any practical way. He served that time. He may have left the country according to the conditions. It appears that he was subject to an immigration hold, and it sounds like he was probably deported. Ms. Galley may know more about that than I do. But it would have no practical effect on the 90-day jail term.
So let me ask you on that, if I can, Mr. Holman, and I only ask this half facetiously. Have you ever seen an appeal get through this in court in 90 days? And if not, how is this not capable of repetition evading review? It seems to me, with all respect, a prototypical case that evades review when you're dealing with a 90-day window.
Well, there are three answers to that question, Your Honor. One is the Smith case is presently in the Supreme Court on this very issue about whether a defendant is entitled to pre-sentence confinement credit on a jail term. Is that issue squarely before the Supreme Court? So it appears that it is not evading review. As a matter of fact, in the current situation, I know that case has been argued and it's currently at issue. Let's assume somehow that case magically goes away. The other way that this could not evade review would be that a defendant would get this sentence, would appeal from it, and seek a stay under the statute, which is 16-4201 of the probationary period during the appeal, and say that this is an issue directly related to that the probation sentence and condition. So I think it is at either end, it's not, it is one that is not capable of evading review.
Does a litigant have to take the chance that another party's case will or won't be litigated to conclusion? That was your first part, is, well, Smith is on review. Who knows if they'll dismiss it as improperly granted? Who knows what they'll do with it? Does a litigant have to forbear taking action to protect his or her rights in that situation?
The answer is no, that, but I think that the first part of the mootness test is the one that I think your question goes to, which is there a practical effect on the defendant's sentence based on the claim that he's raised?
Well, it actually goes to both. It goes to the capable repetition evading review. You gave two reasons why it's not evading review. It's in front of the Supreme Court. And I'm saying, is that a certainty that the Supreme Court will decide that case? Or have we seen cases for which cert has been granted and the Supreme Court has declined to decide them?
Yes, some of my own, actually, have been dismissed as improperly granted.
But what is the issue in Smith again?
It's the first question in this case, which is a defendant entitled to pre-sentence confinement credit against his jail term as a condition of his probation? And in that case, the Court of Appeals held that the trial court, sentencing court, had absolute discretion about whether to grant or not grant pre-sentence confinement credit. But it was an all or nothing. It either had to grant all the credit or not. And so the issue is, that's the underpinnings of that issue, but it encompasses the issue that's in front of this court today. You started by asking me whether the defendant needed to forego his rights here, and my first point was that this will have no practical effect on his rights, and therefore, we get to the second question, I think, by that assumption, that it is something that's not going to have a practical effect.
Well, let me ask you this. Assume that his probation is revoked, and he has served the 90 plus 70. isn't he then entitled to 150, assume on revocation, he's sentenced to confinement. Is he not? And he's entitled to pre-sentence confinement here, okay? Then isn't he entitled to 150 days or 160 days of pre-sentence confinement?
I think
in the event it's revoked?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So how is it not, how is it moot?
Well, it's moot because whether or not he's entitled to the credit here or not has no practical effect. If this court were to dismiss this case today, that would not change his entitlement under the statutes to pre-sentence confinement credit. So the only way I can imagine that this court could affect it, and if it would be incorrect, would be to hold that yes, the 70 days was required to go to the 90 days. Unfortunately, you can't get it back, but now it's been counted off against that, and he only gets whatever's left over for pre-sentence confinement credit. I mean, it's very circular, but I try to imagine a way that we could get to a point where what you decide about his right to the pre-sentence confinement credit here could impact a sentence to the DOC, and I just don't see a way under the statute that it could affect that. I think either way, he would be entitled to the credit. I think I'll talk briefly about equal protection. The cases indicate, and I think Judge Gabriel, you were speaking about this, essentially that equal protection under sentencing statute does not require that everyone get identical treatment for identical classes of felony or identical offenses. Instead, it's that everyone is subjected to the same, essentially, parameters of sentencing, the minimum and the maximum sentences that are available. And then within that, as our case law indicates, individualized sentencing is perfectly appropriate. In this sentencing scheme for probation with condition of jail, there is no right to pre-sentence confinement credit. And I want to go back to the terminology just for a second about the sentencing structure, because I think I've heard the term used about the court has discretion to grant pre-sentence confinement credit under the statutes. I would like to look at it a little bit differently and say what the court has is the discretion to factor in the fact that the defendant has spent some time in jail in selecting the sentence. And the reason that I am making that distinction is because I think that's one of the errors in the Smith case, is that it's all or nothing, that somehow the statutes require pre-sentence confinement credit be granted 100% or 0%. And I don't think that's the way it operates. I think that the court gets to factor in that if they want to get a 90-day jail term, or they want to get a longer period of probation, or they want to get a DOC sentence, they may factor in the fact that the defendant spent the time in jail, but that's not operating like a regular pre-sentence confinement credit.
Is there any limit on that, Mr. Holman? I suppose the concern that I have, if we have a pure DOC sentence and pre-sentence confinement credit, we know where we're at. If we've got a jail sentence, we know. Here, what's the limit on the court's discretion? And your position, of course, is that the 90-day aggregate applies only to once you're in probation, you know, after we pass that. I mean, if the guy's in pre-sentence confinement credit for 5 years or 10 years, the court really just can do, yeah, we'll just give you 90 more days. I mean, is there any limit on the court?
Well, there are two answers. One is no, and the other one is yes, there is absolutely a limit, which is the probation is a privilege. The defendant applies for it, asks for it, agrees to it like a contract. If the defendant thinks I'm better off taking the 5 years of pre-sentence confinement credit against my 10-year sentence to the DOC versus 100 years of probation plus 90 days in jail, absolutely, the defendant can refuse probation. There's no question about it. So that is the limit on that. There isn't any other statutory or constitutional limitation on that. So I think the sentencing scheme here operates within those equal protection parameters. The court has the discretion to factor in, again, I don't want to call it pre-sentence confinement credit, you can call it that. It has the discretion to factor that into choosing the length of probation and whether there'll be any jail term up to 90 days aggregate.
Is that the equal protection analysis, Mr. Holman, or is that the statutory analysis? Because the equal protection analysis, I thought, was, wait a minute, you're treating people differently based on their indigency status. So I thought to address the equal protection issue, you got to talk about why people are not being treated differently.
Well, I think I think that is the equal protection analysis for whether the sentencing scheme is fair or not. I think our case law indicates that while it seems to be a policy concern, that we try to ensure that people who are perhaps unable for some reason to get out on bond, that they get credit for the time, that it's not a constitutionally required granting of pre-sentence confinement credit based on the indigency as a factor. So I think that these are the perfect parameters that define how we determine whether the statute violates equal protection or not.
I want to make sure, in other words, your position on equal protection is everyone is being treated the same because the parameters are the same and the court just chooses to exercise discretion in each independent individual
case. Exactly. And to use an example, but let's talk about a DOC sentence where you're entitled to pre-sentence confinement credit. The court may change the length of your sentence, factoring in the fact whether you were in incarcerated or not. I mean, there are ways, as in this case, for the court to factor those kinds of things in other ways than pre-sentence confinement credit. And I think this is a good example of that type of situation where the court up front said, basically, that was one of the things I considered in choosing a probationary term here. I don't think I have anything else to cover. If the court has any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
In this particular case, it's clear that the court did an illegal sentence because the probation sentence says you cannot have an aggregate of more than 90 days. The reality is he did 160.
But the language is such commitment can't exceed 90 days, and the issue is statutory reading is what does such mean, right?
It is, but it'd be an over-technical reading to make it post-conviction. I mean, under Massey versus People is cited, under Schubert, under Johnson, under Freeman, all of them are saying it's to eliminate the potential for unequal treatment of indigent defendants. So there's an assumption, if not in our common law, that this is how the statutes have been read by the courts all of this time. And I do want to apologize. I had been using the Johnson case. It's the Edwards case from 2008, not Johnson. I was wrong on that. There is no question in this case that the time he served was direct nexus to the conviction he got. This is not like many of these other cases where you're doing parole on another case or you have misdemeanors. You have one case, one conviction, one sentence. This is directly related. So that issue is removed, which seems to, and several of those cases were 35 cases. Rule 35, and they were under the old Rule 35, which was ABC sort of mixed together before they separated out, and I think it was 99 or 2000. If that answers your question, because they were several of them were indigents that claimed they didn't get their good time credit in the prisons, and that went into a whole different analysis.
Right. My question not was wasn't is this a 35? Is it a 35A illegal sentence? I think yeah. These issues have come up in 35 proceedings, but have they come up in illegal sentence or sentence in violation of constitutional statutes? It may look like, angels dancing on the head of the needle, but still may be important.
I don't think it is angels. I think it is very important because the legal sentence means one which the court had no jurisdiction or power to enter. He did not have power to enter a sentence that aggregated more than 90 days. And I think it's the aggregation word that more strongly does it. In all of those other cases that I listed before, there's an assumption that the court has discretion. Those we have all found in reading these cases, there's no statute granting the discretion, but it's been there. Castro came up under discretion. As far as overlooked, it is clear the minimus is illegal. We do not have a credit. If the judge made it clear that by suspending the DOC sentence, which I agree there also is not a statute permitting, but the court discretion is discretion did it, there's not going to be a violation of probation hearing. It's a suspended sentence. It's going to go right to DOC with an incorrect minimus because the credit for time served is not there. If there are no further questions, I will stop at that. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted and opinion will issue in due course.